Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have
to. Hey, look at that.
Here's John Williams.
The Congress looks like us. This is John. I'm watching TV over here. CNN's up, and Nancy Pelosi's getting her attaboys. Her attagirls. Everybody's clapping her on the back. She's been elected as the House Speaker, and I won't dwell on that. I know that's good news for some folks and agitating to other folks. I think Nancy Pelosi getting put back in the position of House Speaker isn't as important. I understand the tide shift in the House, but Nancy Pelosi's story to me isn't as interesting and important and even impressive as the very nature of the Congress as a result of the midterm election. That is, the Congress looks more like us. You've seen these stories, but look at that. Illinois' Lauren Underwood is now the youngest female African-American ever elected to the Congress. The first Muslim women are in the Congress. The youngest woman ever elected to the Congress. You have other notables like Republican Marsha Blackburn will be the first female senator from Tennessee. Republican Cindy Hyde-Smith made history in the midterms by becoming the first woman elected to the Congress from Mississippi. And Democrat Kristen Sinema, or Sinema, S-I-N-E-M-A, became the first female senator elected to represent Arizona. Sinema will also make history as the first openly bisexual senator. The state of Texas will be sending its first Latinas to Congress. That amazes me. Texas is sending its first Latinas to Congress after Democrats Veronica Escobar and Sylvia Garcia won their congressional races. And that's not all. The list goes on and on and on. Koreans, Native Americans, Muslims are all now in the Congress. Obviously, particularly on the Democrat side in the House, the freshman class is unlike, well, the exact opposite would be the incumbent senators, because that's white men, and this is a rainbow of men and women, not to say nothing of orientation and nationality. So it's all there, and that is what the new Congress looks like. So now we'll see what gets done. We asked you at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page, speaking of that, which are you? Which are you? And we gave you four options. The biggest group was, I don't want the wall, and I don't want the Democrats to back down. Those of you that are with Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and say, keep it as it is, don't buckle to Donald Trump. That was 83% of you. 10% of you, the next largest group, said, I want the wall, and I don't want the president to back down. So the other side was as resolute, although smaller in numbers in our unscientific listener survey, 10%. And then 7% of you, 4 and 3% on either side, were willing to compromise. That's the takeaway. The 93%, when we asked you online to tell us how you feel about the wall, 93% of you said, I don't want my side to cave. Drag this thing out. Only 7%. And the online survey said, okay, I feel this way, but maybe we should compromise. Only 7% said that. Yesterday, we talked about 23andMe and Ancestry.com, some of those genetic DNA testing kits and companies. Lo and behold, there was another story like that in the Tribune today. In fact, we made that the news click today. Here's producer Aleph.
How would you feel if your 23andMe test contained a surprise about your siblings or parents?
Yeah, right.
A, I'd be horrified. I don't want to know.
That's Violetta.
B, I'd be shocked, but I'd want to know.
It's kind
Three,
of me, yeah.
C, my brother doesn't look like any of us. Bring it.
I don't look like my sister.
Yeah, you do. We've all seen her. You guys look so alike.
Well, as we get older, we are morphing into each other. But yeah, when we were little, I was like the black sheep. Like, everyone's like, why are you tan? Why don't you look like anyone? Yeah.
Maybe that's
Scratches
why you're little.
Scratches the eye casually. Oh, tan.
I think that that's you said two interesting things there. One is that eventually we all do morph into our parents and siblings as we get older. My brother sent a picture out to members of our family last night of him with his daughter and wife. And my sister, his other sister, or one of his sisters, said right away, "Oh, my God, you look so much like Dad now." You know, you're just, there you are, tooling along in life, being younger than your parents and blah, blah, blah. And then one day, somebody goes, "Holy cow!" And that is inevitable.
Well, and also you remember your parents at a certain age, and then you don't, they don't change in your head, but you continue to change the
right
way you look.
I know, and they were old when they looked like you are now starting to look, and that's a little horrifying too. What you can't do is change the fact that physically you will resemble your parents, even if they don't live in your house. Maybe you're not resembling your mom and dad so much, and that's got everybody wondering. But what you can change is if there's something about your parents that you really like, you can adhere to that and work on it. If there's some trait about your parents, and there is, that you don't love, then you need to be cognizant of that and sort of work against that. It's just a generational self-improvement thing. It's not knocking your parents. It's just everybody could probably do a little bit better.
But sometimes it feels like it's in your DNA.
Oh, God. Well, that's why we have parents. That's why we have spouses. That's why I have a wife and kids. Because every now and then they'll go, "Dad." And I go, I know. My bad. You caught me. I'm doing that thing that my mom or dad does or my brother does, and I shouldn't be doing that. That's why you got married and had kids. Because then they can go, hey, you want to be that? Oh, no, I want to work on that. I'm not naming any names. I'm not defining any traits. I'm just saying you probably know who you are and what they is. And there are times where you go, "Oh, man, it's happening! It's happening! I'm becoming my dad!" In fact, that's that whole commercial campaign.
I love those commercials.
What is it, Geico? Or they say, "You can't do anything about that, but you can do something about this."
Right, as soon as you become a homeowner. What, are you trying to refrigerate the whole neighborhood?
They start dancing. You know, he goes to the club and he's acting like an old man now.
"Come on in, the water's fine."
And then he's doing that white guy dance. No!
It's not a white guy dance. It's a dad dance.
It totally is.
Get everyone involved. Come on. Don't be embarrassed.
Come on, the water's great. Come on in. If you ever wanted to see your children sprint, if you wanted to know how fast they could run, invite them onto a dance floor. Wah! There they go. Violetta, Elif, this is a quiz for you. You'll be asked to remember this phone number later in the show. Steve Bertrand Travel at Steve Bertrand
847-606.
Keep going.
6065.
How are we going to remember that?
Because there's 2 6-0-6s.
Okay, here's what I think. I mean, you're right. You could do it that way. Obviously, it's worked for you. But this is my device. This is Violetta. Here's how you're going to remember the phone number for Steve Bertrand Travel. He's sending Brenda and me and a bunch of our listeners on a trip to London and Scotland in April and May. It's going to be wonderful. 3 days in London. We take the first class train up to Scotland after that. We spend 3 days in Scotland, 3 nights in Scotland. Then we come back. Hopefully we come back. Maybe we stay. And
so where do the numbers line up with that?
You can go to SteveBertrandTravel.com, find all about it. I've created a Facebook page along these lines, but you might. Steve says it helps if you just call. So here's the number to call. Imagine Steve Bertrand.
He lives in the suburbs.
On the north side, 847 area code.
Okay.
Imagine Steve Bertrand is the coach of a Chicago-wide all-star basketball team.
Okay. Because he's tall.
Right. And he's 847. He lives up north.
Yeah.
Now, what's the Chicago area? It's the 606.
Obviously.
All of our zip codes are 606.
Okay.
And an all-star basketball team, how many guys would you put on the floor at any given time?
Five!
So his phone number is 847-606-606.
Five.
That's his phone number.
Cool.
Now, I'm going to ask you later in the show to tell me that number.
Do I need the whole story?
No, because that's it, I've made it tedious. I don't mean to.
No, but you also related it to basketball, which I would have thought was just lost on me, but it's not.
Here's a basketball story in the news. 847-606-6065. Call that number. He'll set you up. Springfield, I believe, Missouri. Did you hear the story about the Dora High School basketball team? The Dora High School basketball team was in a tournament, and they were in the championship game, a game they won by 2 points, 64 to 62. The Dora High School basketball team has a set of triplets, or a threesome of triplets. They have triplets on the basketball team. In fact, at times, all three of them are on the floor at the same time. One of them isn't as good a free throw shooter as the other. They're identical triplets. So in the scrum of rebound, one of them got fouled, and the referee called the foul on an opposing team player, and we all know who's supposed to shoot the shot. It's the kid that had the ball and got fouled. As everybody's lining up for the free throw, he casually walks over to the sideline to talk to the coach while his identical twin brother, who's a better free throw shooter, goes to shoot the free throws.
No.
And they do this evidently all the time.
What?
And nobody noticed because they're identical and in the scrum of a... I mean, you, trust me, the players know. But the kid walked over real casual. Hey, coach, how we doing? Talking to the coach on the sideline. Well, his brother takes the ball, bounces it, and makes the free throws. They won by 2 points.
Wow.
Nobody knew until after the game when one of the parents of one of the other kids on the other team goes, wait a minute. You can follow the foul, and then you can follow that kid. And now he's not shooting the free throw. Another official that was watching the game in the stands said it may have happened 4 times, and parents from the kids on other schools that this team has played, they said, oh, yeah, they do this. Now, that's wrong.
That is horrible.
But I don't know how horrible it is.
It's horrible for the coach, you know, encouraging the kids to do that.
This is a weird thing. But just imagine that cheating in sports is not wrong unless you get caught. You have officials. You seek the advantage. If you're not caught at it and get away with it, then your team has an advantage.
It's not sportsmanlike.
Okay, but then explain to me how when a player goes to slide into second base and he's tagged and he knows he's out, do players volunteer? Hey, guys, look, I know. Well, I'm out. No, they hope that the referee got it wrong. And then they'll keep the base, and they aren't asked, and they won't tell.
Well, a part of it is selling it, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
You get hit a little bit, you fall a little bit more dramatically.
What if you're hit? Oh, totally. Guys flop sometimes, and they aren't touched at all.
But this is a clear deception of, I mean, that's crazy.
If I could jump in here, it's a cliche for a reason. If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
See, that's what I said. That's what I said.
It's still cheating if you don't get caught.
I don't know that if in sports that's true. For instance, say you pretend that you got hit by a pitch. Here's a high fastball. You go back and then you shake your hand. Oh, you didn't get hit, but you get to first base if you can get to first base. That's every bit as much as cheating as going to the... And we all kind of embrace that. If we don't embrace it, we know that happens and nobody loses their... You know.
So you're saying they did a good job deceiving everybody, so bravo.
I wouldn't do that if I... By the way, the high school coach, I mean, this is...
Oh,
really,
they're in high school.
It's always about the adults. It's always about the adults. These are high school kids.
I thought they were younger, okay.
The coach of the triplets is their dad.
Oh, geez.
And he's the principal. So when you go to...
Oh, my God.
So when you go to complain to the management at the school, he goes, well, you know...
This is ridiculous. He needs to... be taken down.
It's like the small town where the sheriff is the mayor, is the jailer. Every time you're looking for some help, and it goes, it's the same guy.
This is ridiculous.
John, that basketball story's fake news. Each player has a number on their shirt. You can't mix up the players. Okay, well, I'll tell USA Today that in the video that, because I watched the video and read the story in the USA Today today.
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
And so they get away with it.
Do they have the same number?
When...
They can't.
No, they don't. It's like 13, 14, 15, whatever. Okay. But you've seen basketball games where there's six guys in the lane all jumping for the ball. The whistle blows and the officials mix it up. They go, was it?
And if you sell it, if you're confident in their decision, they had obviously a structure to make that happen.
Hey, John, they have different numbers. How can they cheat? They're identical triplets.
I've seen that happen in basketball games when they're not twins or triplets.
Right. They get confused. Right. You will see that. A guy who's the better free throw shooter will kind of hang around the free throw line and go, give me the ball. I'll shoot it. And then they go, no, it's not you.
And when is it over? Like, you can't go back, and once it's been shot, the play stands, right?
Right. Once that ball goes through the hoop, I don't know that you can go back and change anything about that. Maybe if right then and there they caught it, but they didn't. They caught it after the fact. How about this? If the ball is out of bounds, or if you're out of bounds, you know you dribbled out of bounds. You know if you stepped out of bounds, or at least often enough you do. Do you volunteer that information? Or how about the ball goes off your hand, but the official thinks it went off the other kid's hand? You know it touched you last. Do you volunteer that? I have a litany of examples where honesty does not prevail.
Well, that's more in a scuffle. It's hard to tell. This is so crazy. It's like clearly wrong.
George on line one wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi, George.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Pretty good. What's on your mind?
All right, so this is kind of how I define cheating, especially in baseball and basketball and other things. There's two different kinds, I guess, of cheating that you guys are talking about.
Just don't start a conversation with your girlfriend like that.
No. One that's done behind closed doors, like clenching a bat or putting tar on your neck in baseball.
Yep.
And then there's the kind of cheating that happens that is open for everybody to see, like it's decided by a referee. Now, I do not condemn whatsoever cheating of any kind in the locker room where no one else can see what's going on and can have an opinion. But if an umpire misses a call, that's on the umpire. It's not on the guy sliding into second base or into home plate. I mean, the umpire made the decision. You have to live with it either way. I don't define that as really cheating. That just comes with the territory of the human factor.
Okay, but hold on. So in this instance of the referee did not catch it. He didn't catch the wrong kid went to the free throw line. Is that cheating?
It's up to the referee to catch it. It's on the referee. Have to do what the referee said. They followed all the rules according to the official.
That's it.
And
in sports, it's not what happened. It's what did the referee say happened.
Yeah.
And so
it's not like, you know, it's not like somebody went into the locker room, changed outfits, and came out where no one.
So, George,
you're
okay with this then?
I'm okay with it. You have to go with what the referee says, no matter how ludicrous it is about it.
Thank you for the phone call. By the way, Violetta and I are dating now. Hey, Violetta, you know there's two different kinds of cheating.
Oh, is there?
Let me explain. How's that going to go for me? Not too well, right?
I don't think so.
Just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't know how. Maybe Edward Burke will be found not guilty. Maybe none of these charges will stick. Maybe this is overreach and it's not true. But if there's any truth to this 37-page indictment where they've got Edward Burke's phone call tapped and they've been reading his email, and if they find out that he was actually illegally soliciting campaign donations and doing stuff like that, when are these guys going to learn? I just don't get it. I'm reading from the Tribune now. The 37-page complaint reveals that authorities want a judge's approval to wiretap Burke's cell phone to record numerous calls. The evidence includes email and other documents. They allege he allegedly illegally solicited a campaign donation for an executive with a restaurant company for another position. The Tribune calls this, even by Chicago standards, stunning. According to one count, in 2017, Burke tried to extort a company that owns fast food restaurants in the Chicago area and needed help with permits for a remodeling job. I've always felt that the aldermen in Chicago have too much power, and he has been one of, said Jason Meisner in the Tribune, Chicago's most powerful figures and a vestige of the city's old Democratic machine. He's been charged with attempted extortion for allegedly using his position as an alderman to corruptly solicit business for his private law firm. We've all thought that that was a little too cozy. We've all thought that was a little too cheeky. He is 75. And if he's found guilty and they put him in jail for a while, boy, am I jumping the gun here, but they don't normally throw 37-page indictments around lightly. What a sad ending to his career that will be. Now, he's been looked at before. In fact, that's what he says. Oh, we've been down this road. They never find anything. So we'll see what they find. Well, we can see what they found. We'll see if it holds up. But that's where that story is today. And I just don't get it. I just don't get it. Don't these people read the newspapers?
Before the law firm part, it kind of sounds like the cost of operating in Chicago.
Totally. Totally.
I mean, if you have a business in Chicago, you want to be best friends with your alderman. There's no way around that. Nothing goes through without a stamp from their office. They're in control of everything in their ward.
And sometimes that's great constituent service, and sometimes it's a little fishy, too. But if you want to open up a business or if you want something done or changed, you've got to go through your alderman, and the other aldermen tend to support the power of a local guy over his local district. I know that was a brilliant thing I just said here, but it just seems to me like those guys have a little too much power and that it's a little too cozy. This is why when I get to be king, and I'll be king for a long time, but you will not be able to hold an elected office very long. I'm for term limits, even when the politicians are really good. Eric Zorn and I bantered this about, and Eric at least agrees with me in that it would be good to have term limits for positions of power. Mike Madigan could not be the Speaker of the Illinois House forever, even if the local constituents want to keep reelecting him. Edward Burke could not always be in charge of the city's finance committee, even if he's good at it, because that's just bad. That's just bad. Mark Baser just strolled into the studios of WGN Radio. You know him as a frequent guest here, a funny commentator on things, and the host of his talk show at the Hideout. How are you, Mark Baser?
I'm doing well. How are you? Happy New Year.
Literally, as you were walking in, this story is crossed.
Yeah.
So Burke
I'll
is
leave.
Being, it's all right. What do you have to say about this, Mark? You're a Chicago.
Well, I don't know the story.
Well, you know everything I know now. He's 37-page indictment. They say he was shaking people down.
We're used to this.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that...
Insert politician's name here.
Yeah. I don't know. You'd like to think that there's a new breed of aldermen and alderwomen coming who don't play by these rules.
The Tribune says the criminal charge was jaw-dropping, even for a city with a long history of public corruption. While dozens of his city council colleagues have been convicted and sent to prison over the decades because nobody reads the newspaper or has a very good memory. That was me. Burke was largely seen as too clever or sophisticated to be caught. He'd faced federal scrutiny several times before, but always escaped the charges. Turned 75 last week. Often decides Chicago's most important issues. Controls millions in campaign funds. The sole steward of the city's $100 million workers' compensation program. He's also married. His wife, Justice Ann Burke, was quietly sworn in to a second 10-year term on November 29th, the same day her husband's City Hall and 14th Ward offices were raided. I remember that. I didn't remember that coincided with her being sworn in for 10 more years on the state Supreme Court. And she's lovely and smart, and I've talked to her a couple of times, and everything I've read about her, I've always liked.
She does a lot with the Special Olympics, right?
That's why she was in here, talking about the big one they had here, the anniversary celebration. So that's where that story is. Golly, when are we going to learn? When are we going to learn? How are you, Mark Baser?
I'm great. I'm better than him.
Yeah, no kidding. So if you had a bad day, it just got that much better. It's coming up on your show.
Yeah, two things. We got, it's back on the TV.
Yeah, Channel 11.
So thanks for letting me plug that.
Wait, Channel 2?
Channel 11.
Channel 11?
Yeah, what's Channel 2?
It's the PBS affiliate in Minneapolis.
It was where I grew up, too, in Boston. So I was like, wait a minute, where do I live now?
The PBS affiliate in the Twin Cities is Channel 2.
Or you can watch CBS if you want.
Yeah, really. Crack that, and then you've really got some dough coming
there you
in,
go.
Buddy boy.
Yeah.
So you're on Channel 11 starting when?
The 10th. So a week from, just next Thursday, right?
So is this a video of the past
we
year's
filmed stuff
worth
over,
of shows?
Yeah, we filmed stuff over the last year. And I'm excited. It's great. We have Michael Wilbon from Pardon the Interruption on ESPN, longtime Chicago journalist, too, is on.
And great Chicago fan. Did you know, I saw this in the paper the other day, what was Northwestern's football record for the 4 years that Wilbon went to Northwestern?
Did they win a game?
They were 5-41. Or 4-43 or something like that. But they won like 3, 4, 5 games, and they lost all the rest of the games. They averaged one win or less per year for the 4 years he was at Northwestern.
And I bet he was at every victory, though. I bet he was at every loss,
Oh, he probably
too.
Was. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah. So you interviewed Wilbon on one of your stage shows at the Hideout.
Yeah, he was great.
You're videotaping that for Channel 11.
He filmed it already. So the secret there is because obviously it's a different ball game than here, where you're talking about what's going on right now. And so we have to talk about things that could happen anytime.
That will be fresh on the tree. Like, yeah, you couldn't even be talking about the Cubs' victory if you did it in the summer.
What we do is we film multiple outcomes. We spent 9 hours talking to Michael Wilbon about every possible outcome.
The Cubs won an extra innings? Go. The Cubs lost a heartbreaker. The Cubs got blown out. Now give me your thoughts.
It's an editing job, I'll tell you. Something with Cam you're talking about, his life story, it actually challenges me to not deal with the present, to deal with things that are about his life and about things like that. So I like that. The challenge is like when you have somebody talking politics, especially now because everything happens so quickly.
Well, remember in 2016, I was your guest.
You were on, right.
And just before the election. And you said, okay, but don't remember.
I think
remember.
I said just use the subjunctive tense or something like that. And it kind of worked.
I don't even know what that is, but I know what you mean. But yeah, the point was whatever we said had to play on either side of November, not knowing what was going to happen.
And that's right. And good thing we did, because at that point, nobody thought that what happened would happen.
The whole vibe was Hillary was going to win.
Yeah, and somehow we edited it so the vibe was
neutral.
Yeah,
but we knew Trump was going to win. That would have been really good editing.
Yeah, so I've gotten better. I've gotten better at understanding a not to talk about things like that, and also to just talk about people's stories, talk about people's lives.
So on your show at the Hideout, you do a monologue, and then you have two, three, four guests.
Yeah,
you do three or four guests.
Three or
usually.
Four, yeah.
Often it's an entertainment thing, like a rapper, a musician, a comedian. Do you include those on the Channel 11 takes?
Yeah, so the first episode has Wilbon, and then it has a jazz musician who's you should have on. He's wonderful. His name is Micaiah McCraven. He lives here. He's a Chicago guy, and his album ended up being on a lot of best of the year lists, not just jazz, but just music in general.
What does he play? What kind
of
jazz?
He plays drums, but he does this really interesting thing where for his recordings, he'll record a bunch of shows, and then he'll take those live recordings and edit them and splice them together to remove the stuff about Trump. He splices them together and makes new compositions out of those live recordings.
Well, he's accompanied by other musicians.
Yeah, for sure. So he came on and we talked, and then the end of the show is his performance. Wow. So, and it's good.
What else you got on this show?
So that's that episode next week.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, it's Wilbon and the drums, because you spend a lot of time with Wilbon.
Well, what we do is it's a half hour. So when you go to my show, it lasts for 9 hours, and then we cut it down to...
It's, what are you, 70 minutes or 90 minutes?
It's 90 minutes. 90
minutes.
And so tomorrow Friday? Yeah, tomorrow we have a live show, which we're not filming. So if you want to see it, you got to be there to see it.
Are tickets still available?
Yeah, there's some tickets left.
Who's going to be at the Hideout this time?
So tomorrow's a little bit different, because tomorrow, I don't know if you've been following at all, if you've discussed it on your show, but there's this whole... I don't know if it's controversy, but there's a possibility that the Hideout won't be around forever. And the reason for that is this big project that's going on at Lincoln Yards, where they're talking about building a number of entertainment venues, and they're talking about... It used to be the area, for those who don't know, used to be where they kept the city's garbage trucks, and the Department of Fleet Management was there, and policemen and firemen could fill up their gas there. And then right behind the Hideout... kind of is where the Finkel Steel Mill used to be. So this is for people who know where the Home Depot is over by North and Elston. We're talking about that area.
It's a lot of land.
It's a lot of land, and something needs to happen with it. I mean, nobody's arguing that it doesn't. But there's a company called Sterling Bay that is very powerful in the city, and they bought a lot of the land up in the area. They did not buy the Hideout. The Hideout is not for sale. But they want to develop the land into just a place for people, new condos, kind of create a neighborhood, but kind of out of kind of thin air kind of thing.
But how does that hurt the Hideout?
Well, it's one of the things on the table is that they would put five or so entertainment venues, including a concert hall of 100 that fits 100 people, which is kind of like a hideout.
Yeah.
And it would all be run by Live Nation, and Live Nation is the biggest game.
Good. Well, they need... Yeah. God, let's help them.
Right? Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not editorializing here, but that's... And then they're also... I'll do that tomorrow. I'll editorialize. But they're also putting in they want to put in a soccer stadium because the Chicago Fire have done so well. And
you're pulling my leg there?
Yeah, I don't know why they want to put in a big stadium.
Doesn't the Chicago Fire have a place to play at the
Toyota? I don't think it's for the Fire. I think it's, I don't know, it's unknown. It's unclear.
Seems to me like they've got a place to play.
They do have a place, and it's actually a fun place to
go. That's what I thought.
And then there's talk of, and then condos and everything like that. So, I don't know. Could the Hideout coexist with everything that's going on there? Yeah, maybe.
Classic kind of gentrification conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird gentrification conversation because gentrification normally involves a neighborhood of people being pushed out. There are no people in this area. So it's a little, like, one of the odd charms of the Hideout, because I know you've been there, is that it kind of belonged to everybody because it belonged to nobody.
Nobody. Well, that's the first time I was there. I said, Mark, you know there's sanitation trucks here, right? I mean, you almost share a parking lot with sanitation trucks.
I mean,
trucks.
Absolutely. Our backdrop, we made a picture of this of the truck. And it was kind of sad when the trucks left.
For Christmas, my son got a book, like 111 places you need to see in Chicago. One of them is The Hideout.
For sure.
And it talks about what a classic place that has been. Not just as a hall, not just as a club, but sort of the vibe, the sort of purpose of that place is to embrace creative thoughts. I was thinking of you, and I actually read something that maybe is written on the wall, or it's their mission statement, as well as music. I suppose there are other places like that in Chicago, but this one's in the book as a classic Chicago, rooted venue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously very biased, but I don't think there's a place like it. And just like other places, there's no place like those other places. I think, the city makes progress, and I'm not against that, and I don't think anybody at the Hideout's against that, but it's... Okay. Anyway, so the point is, tomorrow on our show, we have a number of people who do regular shows like me at the Hideout who are the guests. So we have Mick Dumke, who writes for ProPublica, and Ben Jarofsky, who writes for The Reader, of course.
Well, they do shows. Yeah, they do a
monthly podcast. Political talk show at the Hideout. Then we have Jen Sabella and Erica Wozniak, who's running for alderman. And they host a show called The Girl Talk at the Hideout. It's another talk show at the Hideout. Claire Zulke and Steve Delahoyd, who host a kind of a humor show, which Zorn has been on, called Funny Haha, which is great. And then a musician named Owen Ashworth, who plays there all the time as well. So we're kind of celebrating the Hideout and raising our arms and
in protest.
Defiance, yeah.
Attica.
There you go. There you go.
Mark Baser's in the studio. You can watch his shows on Channel 11. So what's the schedule if people want to tune you in on TV?
TV, we're switching times, which I think is a good thing. We're going to be on Thursdays at 10 p.m. with repeats on Sundays at 10:30 p.m.
Okay.
And then repeats at probably 4 a.m. on another day.
Thursdays and Sundays.
That's good, right?
Late
Those are good
night,
times.
10
yeah.
and 10:30.
It's a talk show, so it feels right.
And it's on stage. It's very, very good. Mark, it's the A-listers that are in town are coming through town. And he always has a great conversation with him. They edited him down to 30-minute shows, and it feels...
The season's great, I got to tell you. I mean, I know that's...
Who else are you looking forward to that we're going to see this run?
We have Rebecca Mackay, who wrote a novel that was up for the National Book Award. It was one of the finalists. We have Gillian Flynn, who wrote Widows and Gone Girl, of course.
Had the movie come out when you interviewed her?
It hadn't, but that's a good example where I'm glad I didn't talk to her too much about the movie.
Because, why?
Well, I actually didn't talk to her at all about the movie because it was just good talking, having a conversation.
Fair enough, right? Every other interview afterwards is going to be about that.
Yeah, it's nothing would have been special about that.
It's a good movie, though.
I haven't seen it yet. Don't tell her.
Gillian, Mark didn't see it. Well, we saw it on Thanksgiving. My family always goes to one special movie on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
And then we go to Lowry's. That's our tradition.
Yeah.
So every year it's, what's the movie we're going to see? What's the big breakout movie that starts the holiday season on Thanksgiving? This year we went to see Widows.
That's good. I just watched Boss Baby over and over again. With
Boss
my
Baby?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Just sit there and watch it.
Well, here's my review of it. So the four of us sat there. We rate things on a scale of 1 to 23 jujubes at my house.
Yeah, sure.
And Griff got out, and he was feeling good about it. He goes, that was a home run. That was a 22.
Wow.
And Brenda was like, oh, my God, that movie was so great.
Yeah.
And when I was sitting there, I thought, oh, no, what's happening? This movie is not I'm okay with it, but I'm not sure if everybody else is going to have been happy that we were here at this movie.
So you wanted to please others. You liked it or you didn't like it.
It's funny. I was a little tortured. I was trying to enjoy the movie, but I was always sorry. I was also sorry that maybe my family wasn't. If they had just elbowed me and go, having the time of my life, I would have gone, oh, okay, good. Now I can watch it independent of my worry.
Every movie should stop in the middle so people can have that conversation.
I was talking to with Elif about this a little bit, and Violetta, Sarah, a colleague of ours, who read like 60 books this year.
Wow.
She was sharing with us the list of books she read.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll share it on my Facebook page. It's on hers. Well, she said one of the books that she didn't enjoy so much was one that producer Elif had suggested, which felt like a little bit of a slight.
Because it becomes your book when you recommend it.
It's like when you used to go to Blockbuster and bring a movie home for everybody, and if that wasn't a great movie, you really felt some ownership, which is preposterous. You didn't make the movie.
Well, the converse is that if they do like it, you feel like you created it. So you don't have to actually do much work.
The same when you suggest a restaurant that nobody likes.
Right.
Oh, it's the worst.
Right.
And then you're like, well, now I can't enjoy this, and I'm hungry.
Did I by the way, Sarah's just strolled into the producer bay over there. Did I misrepresent? Sarah, just walk around the glass here. Just come on into the studio.
What book was it?
Well, now, maybe it wasn't. Sarah, did I misrepresent you there? Just that one's fine. Go ahead.
What book of LF's did you hate?
I didn't hate it. You know how some books are easier to get into than others?
Right.
Sure.
I was expecting to just dive right into it.
What was the book?
Snow Falling on Cedars.
Oh, it's a classic.
It's a great book.
And, yeah. Well, and
I've never read it, but
I haven't either, but I've heard of it.
It's still on my pile, but I didn't dislike. At that point, I was getting stressed that, you know, I've been on target. I read 6 books a month every month in 2018 for a total of 72 books.
Do you read every word or do you skip? I mean, seriously, because I learned to skip.
Yep. No, I learned how to speed read in high school. Oh, so there is some speed reading involved. But if it's a really good book that captures your attention, I mean, it's not uncommon for me to finish a book in a day.
I literally don't know what that is like.
I don't either.
I don't think I'm proud of myself.
Oh, yeah, but if I finish a magazine article in a day, I alert the media. A book a day sometimes?
If it's a really good book.
How do you watch 4 hours of television?
Sometimes how do you check your background noise? And actually, most of my
reading. She's not working too hard here.
No. Yeah. Most of my reading is done on the train, on my commute in and out of work.
What was your favorite book of the year?
My favorite non-fiction book of the year was Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine.
My wife
Gail
loved
Honeyman. It.
It
was phenomenal. I hope they don't ruin it when they turn it into a film. Because I think most
What did you make of Becoming?
Loved that. You know, it really...
The Michelle Obama book.
It took me by surprise, honestly. I was expecting greatness from it, and then it almost kind of transformed into like a reveal of more than I hoped for.
It wasn't a reckoning of politics. No. It wasn't even about her husband's job.
The words I used to describe it were, I thought it was filled with grace and honesty.
Hmm. That's Sarah Thiemann, who, if folks want to follow your list on Facebook, can they do that?
Yep. I posted it to my Facebook page yesterday.
Okay.
I have a book for you. Inappropriation. It's a novel. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's by Lexi Freeman.
Okay.
Come back on and tell me how much you hated it.
No, you know, I really appreciate recommendations because I have a list. I keep a list on my phone. Some of my friends have been bugging me to get on Goodreads, but I find that some people are a bit harsh with their criticisms of books. You know, everyone's
there.
A critic.
Yeah.
So I've still withheld and I keep everything on a list on my phone.
Time's up. Okay, so that's Sarah Thiemann. How do they follow you on Facebook, Sarah?
Thiemann.
Thiemann.
Yep.
One N on that.
Yep.
Thiemann. Thiemann.
Yep, like Ty plus man.
On Facebook.
Thiemann.
Now nobody's going to watch my show. They're just going to read.
Thank you, Sarah. We're out of time. So watch Mark Baser's show
Don't pick up a book.
On Channel 11.
No, next Thursday.
Next Thursday?
Yeah, a week
from today. What are you doing here today?
I made a mistake.
Okay. Next Thursday on Channel 11 at 10 and Sunday nights at 10:30. And check them out at The Hideout this Friday night.
Yeah, that's
7
true.
O'clock?
6:30.
You sure about that? Get there at 6.
Have
buy your ticket, have a beer. It's a very good time. It's nice to see you, Mark Baser.
Thank you, John.
By the way, a couple of other notes from Sarah's list. And the latest on the Ed Burke story. The stories that matter in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Have you heard about this? You will.
thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Actually,
here's John Williams.
We're going to sub that out. Brian Burrow from the WGN Radio Newsroom is here. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Remember, you can follow me on social media, WGN King John. Our Mincing Rascals podcast was judged this year best in the city. The Mincing Rascals, wherever you subscribe to find our podcast. Of course, it's free. We think it's pretty good, and the people that judge podcasts said so themselves. In fact, we just are in the process now of submitting new samples of what we did this year to see what the experts think about it. But more important, what do you think? Listen to the Mincing Rascals. We recorded on Thursdays. We got a fresh one in the hopper. It'll go up around 5 o'clock this afternoon. The big news, as you just heard from Eric and Ryan, is that Ed Burke has been... Yeah, what's the end of that sentence, Ryan? Ed Burke has been what again?
Federally charged. Corruption.
37-page indictment. How many charges do we know? I know literally... We're printing it out in the newsroom and reading the dang thing or looking at it online, but how much do you know that you can tell us?
Well, you know, I'm rolling through this right now, and all 37 pages, they actually have transcribed out some of the conversations that were wiretapped from federal agents involving this Ward employee, Ward 1 employee, which has not been identified. The only person identified in any of this is Alderman Burke. Conversations that he had with an executive with Company A. We know Company A right now is a fast food restaurant or chain, or someone who owns a chain of fast food restaurants. It has more than 100 of them in the Illinois area and the Chicago area. And basically what this comes down to boil these 37 pages down, is this company was doing some renovation work in 2017. Got the permits they needed to do this, had to have a face-to-face meeting with the alderman to get his blessing, if you will, to get the support to make this all happen, which is something that happens in the Chicago area quite frequently.
Yeah.
But during this process, apparently Alderman Burke, according to the complaint, was soliciting business for his own private law firm, wanted this company to hire him on, or at least his law firm on, for its tax needs. Also, eventually in this conversation, soliciting political donations for another candidate. This made the individual A and Company A very uncomfortable. And at one point during this renovation project, when they thought they had everything cooking and humming and everything was going well, they say that the permits were declined, ripped out from them, and that was at Alderman Ed Burke's discretion.
So I wonder if they're the ones that then went to the FBI.
It's quite possible. Based on this, they smelled something funny, according to what I'm reading here in this complaint, pretty early into these discussions. And, you know, as we read from Burke's perspective in these discussions, he wanted to have more meetings with them. He wanted to talk with them more. He wanted to get things settled, and it did not look like they were willing to play ball.
Do we know what the company is? I'm trying to think of fast food restaurants that have 100. It could be any one of a number, but it's not a mom and pop shop. It's a McDonald's. It's a Taco Bell. It's a Starbucks. It's
could be
something like that.
It's not identified in there. We don't know if it's one specific restaurant. You know, you get some of these places like you know, Taco Bell equals Pizza Hut equals, you know, some of these companies where it's more than one brand. But this is one specific restaurant that had at least a fast food aspect to it, a drive up, because a lot of what was kind of held up, or the friction that this complaint claims was created by Alderman Burke, was regarding a driveway that led to a fast food pickup location. So
if they want to get that done, they got to get the alderman to sign off on it, because these guys are czars in their districts. And so then he says, so then evidently he wasn't hearing what he wanted to hear from them at that juncture. I'm extrapolating, aren't I? But that's what this sounds like.
Yeah.
And at that point, you'd think it would be more than just a driveway to one of the restaurants that tipped to this thing. They say that it's not just there was a conflict between his public job and his private business, but he was also soliciting campaign donations, maybe for other candidates too, right?
That's what it sounds like. At least one other candidate who is not identified, soliciting in some way to these individuals who were involved with this corporation. You know, it's... it's an interesting read through. I've read through it. I haven't seen any bleeping gold lines in there, you know, like the
well, you said they transcribed mm-hmm. some of the wiretapped conversations, which were golden in the Blagojevich case. And when that first happened, it came to light. We didn't have the audio until I think there was a Freedom of Information request. There was some sort of request to the government to release the tapes. The Tribune did it. And then we got the tapes. Mm-hmm. And the tapes were much better than a transcription. They were so conspiratorial. And the guest stars, including the current governor, his appearance on these tapes was really interesting. That was the Blagojevich tapes. I wonder if we'll get to hear the Burke tapes.
It's quite possible. Obviously, they exist. Obviously, they got them, and they had been tracking these phone calls dating back to middle of 2017. This kind of all went down in a span of about June to November.
Can you read from any of the transcripts?
Yeah, let me see if I can find anything. I do want to point out that we did learn that the raid on Alderman Burke's offices was a search for some emails that it were exchanged between Burke and Ward employee number one, specifically regarding this kind of transaction that was going on. But once again, it was just kind of talking around building applications. And I'm not seeing anything super sexy in here as far as if you get them to do this, I'll do that.
Right.
It all seem to be, you know, pretty boring speak from everything I've read in here. But let me see.
I have to tell you, though, as you look for that, that's the other thing that was in the back of my head was, I wonder if this will be another case of a Rod Blagojevich saying, you know what, that's how we do business. I didn't mm-hmm. know that this was wrong. That is, hey, your company with 100 restaurants and some of them are in my district. I'm a politician. Sure, it's reasonable to ask for a donation. It doesn't have to be a quid pro quo, but that's how they make sausage. Lisa Madigan gets law firms to donate to her campaign, and her re-elections were never in jeopardy. Now, why were those law firms giving money to Lisa Madigan? That's just because that's what you do. I just pay a little homage to the boss there.
Well, and even if they're not asking, you want to be in someone's good graces if you're going to be asking for something.
Right. So, hey, by the way, we made a donation. I don't know how that goes. Do you mention that? Did they
ask? You go to the luncheon. And you make sure you hand them the check.
There were a lot of lunches in here, by the way. That's where many of these conversations were taking place.
You got to remember, the Supreme Court did rule that horse trading was part of politics as they go now, too.
What do you mean by that?
It was the case out of Virginia, I believe. The governor there had his conviction overturned for corruption because he said it was horse trading.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing. I don't throw Blagojevich's name around lightly, but I think there was and remains some general confusion about the grayness of what can I do as a politician to ask for donations from people who are in my district or want to do business in my district or state. I mean, is it all hands off? Can they make a donation? You should see the list of people that donated to Donald Trump's inaugural balls. Millions of dollars from AT&T and Boeing and companies like that. Now, why did they suddenly want to throw a dance for Donald Trump? Think about that. Why did they want to do it? Maybe because they're flag-waving Americans, and that's the right thing to do, support the new administration. But you believe there's probably more to it than that, right? That happens all the time.
And also, back to the beginning of the show, how much you can get away with without anybody noticing.
The beginning of the show, we told the story of a basketball team that swapped out free throw shooters. They were triplets, and they put the better one at the line. If you can get away with it, you do.
It's not cheating, right?
Unless you get
caught. If the refs don't see, you do it.
What'd you find?
Well, one thing, and we'll get into this in just a second, but one thing, too, that kind of pops out of this 37 pages is the fact that this company, this fast food company, says they've done businesses, you know, all across the country. Architects have done business, and they've never had to go around the buildings department to get a permit through an alderman before. That's what made this so weird for them. They thought they had everything they needed to, and even the building department said, you've got everything you need to. It was Alderman Burke who they said was holding all of this up. So discussion here on page 19, discussion between Ward Employee 1 and Alderman Burke. You guys never transferred over, Burke said. Yep, all the other license they have, Ward Alderman One responded, yeah, now that group, did they ever get back to you? Ward 1 employee, Burke, never. Ward 1 employee continued, after your Burke replied, never. Ward 1 employee continued, meeting at Beverly Country Club, Burke said, never. I took them, this is the individuals, to lunch. I was playing nice with them, never got back. I believe Burke explained to Ward employee 1 that individual A and individual B were never contacted Burke about providing legal work to his private firm as Burke desired. Ward employee 1 said, to tell you the truth, I'm at Beverly right now. Later in the conversation, Ward employee 1, but the group never got back to you, right? Burke responded, never. Ward 1 employee replied, all right, I'll play as hard a ball as I can. Burke said, okay.
Okay. So, but that is Burke wanting this company to do business with his law firm. He wanted to represent them.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
But he never said, I'm not going to stamp the license if they don't.
Yeah. That, like I said, too, there's a lot in here that, you know, we probably need some legal experts to unpack it. And my apologies for not getting through that. I'm just trying to skim through
some of the
highlights.
It's
the conversations that were going on, you know, behind closed doors, according to the complaint.
Which had been caught on tape. Somebody was wearing a wire then. So
sounded like the phones were tapped. And
which
as far as these conversations that happened at these luncheons, a lot of them coming, being transcribed by the individuals who are in there saying, after this meeting, this is what happened. This is, you know, saying after the meeting, this is what happened. This is what we talked about.
Your texts include these from 773. It's about time. 40 years too late, though. Wait until they open the finance records he let no one see. 630, isn't Burke's wife on the Illinois Supreme Court? That's embarrassing.
She is.
She is, and just was reappointed to a 10-year term the day that they wallpapered his office.
And his brother, by the way, yesterday stepped down early from his state seat. A week early.
That's his brother.
That's his brother. Yeah, we didn't know why. And to be honest with you, he was kind of a lame duck anyways because he had lost his primary back in April. It seemed weird that he was doing it a week early, but maybe he got a gig somewhere. And we didn't really read between the lines in that. And we don't know if that has anything to do with this.
And he backdated it to like December 30th or 31st saying,
correct,
take this letter as my resignation effective December 30th. I'm no longer it.
And that came yesterday. So
somebody got a heads up is what it sounds like.
Possibly.
Although, does it trickle down to the... I'm asking questions you don't know the answer
to. Yeah, exactly.
I'm asking questions you cannot know the answer to. John, what's not to get? He's a Democrat in Illinois. 847, is Madigan next? John, and you know Burke has been operating like this for decades, says 773. No, I don't. John 309, the basketball free throw situation. We'll go back to that. That's a fascinating story. John, if you excuse the business as usual attitude, how low does the horse trading go? If you need to repair your porch or replace your driveway at your house, are you expected to kick into the alderman, or is he there to serve you as a voting constituent?
Well, he can't get that much from you, so really, he'll pass that without question.
Okay, because I'm not a rich business, but
it
boy, if I had 100 restaurants in the city... Or if I had some sort of business operation and I needed maybe to get my taxes lowered on my condo.
But let's say your driveway was against the person that is donating.
Yeah, right. Then maybe I'm not in a very strong position, am I? But you forget about all of that. Just think about it this way for a second. You're an alderman or a candidate. You want to get donations for your campaign. Can you go to a business? Well, sure you can. You ask them for donations. You're going to go to businesses that are successful, that are maybe in your district. Hey, I'll represent you.
And the business says, hey, I want that tree knocked down, or I'd like a few more parking spots here, or something like that. I would be more than happy to help you out, but these are the needs that we need right now, you know,
so that's,
these discussions that
sure,
happen.
Sure,
yeah.
And I think you're going to get that tree knocked down, or I'm going to get that street paved more quickly because you're a good leader. So that's the way it goes. But then at some point, then the politician says, boy, I'm running for re-election. I could sure use a donation. And I know that your hospital needs a new wing and you need some extra city grants. You know, I mean, it gets complicated, doesn't it?
It does.
Because maybe I was going to make the donation anyway. Maybe we were or weren't going to give you the grants for the hospital. But now it's kind of overlapped and it gets very confusing, said Rod Blagojevich from Colorado.
Right.
Hey, guys. This just in here, too. I got this from the U.S. Attorney's Office. The defendant is scheduled to make an initial court appearance today at 3 o'clock at Dirksen Federal Courthouse.
We know who that defendant is.
John. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ed Burke.
By the way, I'm sorry. I thought by the context of the conversation could go without saying.
You got it. You got it.
Have they officially though identified him as that? I mean,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the United States of America versus
Edward M. Burke.
We reached out to the local office of the FBI and got the predictable due to the government shutdown. Oh, this is blamed on the government shutdown. Yeah. Holy cow! So it's not that they wouldn't be willing to talk to us, although I don't know that they would. Sometimes they can. But due to the government shutdown, the FBI Chicago is unable to grant any interviews unless it deals directly with the threat to public safety. Well, thanks a lot, Obama. The U.S. Attorney's Office of the Northern District of Illinois has issued a copy of the complaint. The initial appearance is scheduled, as you guys heard. The FBI Chicago has no further comments at this time because they don't have enough money. All right.
The U.S. Attorney's Office also saying due to lapse of federal government appropriations, the U.S. Attorney's Office is not separately providing case information to the media or updating its website and social media accounts.
Right.
The office's essential law enforcement functions, including criminal prosecutions, will continue.
Right.
So until the federal government funds the wall, we're not going to see any movement on the former Trump attorney.
Well, you know what happens in essential jobs? They continue to work without pay, right?
Absolutely. The money should be there when the first payday rolls around, right? When the deal gets done.
They don't have to pay them, but they almost always do. I suspect that they will, but that check's getting bigger and bigger with each missed payday. And by the way, when the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office do go back to full funding, they're still not going to talk to us, I don't think.
Yeah,
but at least they're using this right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the latest. Thank you, Eric, and thank you, Ryan, in the WGN Radio Newsroom. Lots of texts about the new Congress. John, Mrs. Pelosi is such a liability to our country. You have to pass the bill to know what's in it. Famous line of hers. 815 said, John, Nancy Pelosi is the right person for the current atmosphere right now. She's got a proven background. Actually, I read that one earlier, but I had a couple of others that were fawning over her, very supportive of Nancy Pelosi, and others that could not be more upset that she's now the Speaker of the House again. That's the way it is, and we're all wondering what happens to the wall and the funding. The government shutdown continues. The market is down. Who's that dot down the hall? I don't see on the screen. Who's sitting down the way over there?
It's Noonan again.
No, it's Brian Noonan.
Hi, John. How are you?
Not it's Noonan again.
Well, listen, that depends on who you're asking.
Yeah, it's Noonan
but it's
again.
It's me here today and tomorrow for Ro and Anna, and then they'll be back on Monday. But today we are obviously going to be following what's going on with Alderman Ed Burke. He's scheduled to be in court now, so if there is a press conference coming up shortly, we will cover that. We'll talk to Lester Holt from NBC Nightly News after 4 o'clock to get an update on some of the big national stories. And we will talk to the VP of Astronomy from the Adler Planetarium.
Oh, good,
yes,
good.
China landed on the dark side of the moon yesterday.
You got that, and you got that snowman that the spaceship visited way out in space.
Yes.
Have you seen that thing? It's like the furthest reached thing that humanity's ever found, and it looks like a two snowballs stuck together. Doesn't it look like a snowman to you guys?
A little bit, yeah.
Space?
Space and snowman.
And it doesn't have a name. I thought that it's like, you know, M1427-Q.
According to Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokan Show and Space Nerd, it is called the Ultima Thule.
That's not getting it done.
Well, listen.
It needs a name like Rick.
I like Ultima Thule sounds like a transformer, so I'm going to stick with that. I'll let NASA go with that one.
We're going to be listening, my friend.
Sounds good, John. Thank you.